Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today we're going to be discussing the forthcoming general election in Ghana and the contention surrounding the electoral register. I'm joined by an important guest, Dr. Gaddafi Shaibu. Dr. Shaibu is a political scientist and an associate researcher at the German Institute of Development and Sustainability. He researches and writes on social cohesion, social media mis or disinformation, regimes, democratization, autocratization, and electoral violence and civil war. Gaddafi, I'm honored to have you join me today, and I look forward to our conversation.
Thank you very much, Michael. I'm really glad to have you.
Brilliant. So let's start off. General elections will be held in Ghana on, if I'm correct, 7th December 2024. And we have among the contenders, we have former President John Mahama of the National Democratic Congress contesting against the current Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia. And another prominent one is the Trade Minister, Lan John. So we have seen these trends, you know, of former presidents, even older ones, like advancing age. You've seen it in Malawi. We've seen it with Jacob Zuma in South Africa, and even in America. What do you make of this, you know, former presidents or older people, or, you know, this trend of former president returning back to contest? Let's begin with that.
Yes, thank you very much, Michael. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to join your platform today. I'm very grateful. So yes, like you rightly said, we are going into the elections on the 7th of December, and the environment is already charged. Almost all political parties have now kickstarted their campaign in a very highly full swing fashion. And then we have currently the Electoral Commission has actually cleared about 13 political parties to contest the elections. But I mean, for all you know, about, I think, 23 political parties filed nomination to contest for these elections alone. But the Electoral Commission did not clear all of them. It cleared only 13 currently as it stands now, and one of the candidates for one of the long-standing political parties, which is actually now losing its grounds in Ghana, called People's National Convention, led by the former by Edward Mahama. He's a medical doctor, so they've had seats in parliament. But it surprises you to know that their candidate this time, who filed for nomination, was disqualified, and he has taken the matter to court. But that is just the other side of the issues. What you have asked about the issue of former presidents returning to contest elections, it's a matter of concern, and we have to look at it this way. We should look at it from both positive sides. I mean, many people have talked about it from negative aspect. But I want to say that there is also a positive aspect that these former presidents returning to contest elections in Ghana could be some sort of serve as a turning point for electoral politics in Africa. So the former president John Mahama actually served his first term, which was 4 years. And should note that he became the president after the demise of the former president Atta Mills, who died, somewhere in his last year of the first tenure. And then former president John Dramani Mahama took over in 2012 and then completed that. I think it was 6 months that he completed, and then he contested under the same ticket and then won. So when he won the election, the first 4 years, he couldn't, he was not given a nod to go for the second term. And then now he is coming back. So what are the positive aspects of it? I mean, he's coming back, and he's not coming back as like a lame duck in the competition. He's coming back as a very strong candidate who has been predicted by all major polls to be ahead of, to be leading the elections. So there is that possibility that he is most likely to win the elections. So what are the positive aspects of former presidents coming back? We should also note that I wrote an article, I think somewhere last month, asking the question whether it makes sense for citizens to continue with political parties that, into an unknown direction, or to go back to look for the lost item. So in this African traditional, both across Nigeria and Africa, we have all these things that sometimes you Ghanaians, we call it Sankofa, that you have to go back and pick the lost item. So it's like John Mahama, I see the positive aspect. I'm currently talking about the lost item. I mean, he has packaged himself and he's coming back, and he's talking about how, about 2 days ago, he talked about the lessons that he learned in his first tenure, and these lessons have shaped him. He now knows what candidates or Ghanaians expect him to deliver, and then he's coming back. So this is the positive aspect that we should look at: candidates who lose elections and then now they are coming back. And this is introducing a new dimension into African politics, because we have had presidents who have had all this since the inception of the third wave democratization process in the 1990s. Mm. Almost the convention or the norm has been, we elect political parties, they win power, and then they finish their first tenure, and then they ask us, we give them the second tenure, you give them the second tenure, and then they finish, and still we don't see anything positive. I mean, we complain. So it's like we are recycling. Now we are having presidents who lose first tenure, who are punished for not performing in their first tenure, coming back, and then to ask for forgiveness and saying that they have learned their lessons. I think this will be another dimension that if we Africans give, they get the opportunity, we should take another lesson from. And this is the positive aspect that I feel that President Mahama or the Malawian case might introduce to the African politics. And we should observe that. And we shouldn't just see it as a negative, as the usual negative that Africans are so interested in power. Okay, we should see it as a learning in our political trajectories. That should give us the opportunity to experiment all these models, because it's a new model. I see it as a new model that we should experiment and see whether presidents are punished and then they come back, they learn their lessons, and then they improve, or they come back as the same persons that we punish.
That's very interesting that you say that. The guests we had a few months ago for the South African one also share similar notion about the positive and how this also reflects the advancement in democracy in Africa. And I like why you say, why you use that punish and then like a prodigal son coming to beg for forgiveness. Yeah. And then again, now you say that, I'm thinking again, this could also help solve what we have, the prevalence of strongman politics, where you see people fraudulently holding on to power in Africa. whether in Cameroon. So if there's this opportunity where you can, you know, the, create that system, that could help solve that. But let me come to something you mentioned about the polls. So you're right, I've seen polls, you know, having the former president winning. How does that, is that a true reflection of what's on the ground, of what people think?
Definitely, Michael, yes. I mean, I told you, I have been in Ghana for close to 3 weeks now. And on the grounds, you can tell that there is high level dissatisfaction about the performance of the incumbent administration. And in fact, the incumbent administration itself cannot run. This is something, it is so apparent or so obvious that the incumbent administration is not running away from it. So what the incumbent government administration is now doing, the candidate of the government, the incumbent party, what the government is now trying so hard to do is to disassociate itself from the performance of the incumbent administration by saying that if you observe, the vice president recently said that he was only a driver's mate, okay, but not the driver himself. And that saying that, I mean, he's not the one driving Ghana. So this is just to tell you that he's trying to distance himself from the failure of the administration. But what we should tell ourselves as political scientists is that, you know, government is an administration. And when the administration fails, the whole government fails and the government is kicked out. So that is why government is kicked out with all its ministers and all that. So I see this reflecting in the Ghanaian, in the realities of Ghanaian citizens. Citizens are so angry with the incumbent administration that even they are not able, the position or the strategy of the vice president now, or who is now the candidate. Or the flag bearer of the MPP, to distance him, to insulate himself from the failure of the current administration, is not holding on. Because citizens are saying that it is the same vice president who actually led the campaign, who was at the forefront of the political campaign of the new patriotic party, and it won them power. In fact, the president now, at the time that they won power, did not have good image in the Ghanaian context. I mean, if you follow our politics very well, he was actually labeled. He had earned a very negative label of being arrogant and being somebody who doesn't respect Ghanaian society, and being somebody who actually is bent of becoming president by all means. The popular saying, he said, all die, be die, and all that. So it was the running mate, who is now the flag bearer now, who actually was, he's an economist. So he was the one who mounted a lot of platform and then delivered a lot of economic lectures, which gave hopes to Ghanaians. And Ghanaians voted for MPP to come into power. So today it's becoming difficult. And also with the emergence of social media, almost all records or evidence are available to every citizen to play back. So they play back this, his voices and all that, and people cannot really just feel that it's a matter of credibility issue. People just feel that he's trying to distance himself and calling himself a driver's mate now, who is not at the helm of affairs, means that he lacks credibility. And with the dissatisfaction on the ground, I can feel it with people. Prices of things are galloping. I mean, I am in Ghana for about 3 weeks now, and already things that I bought every week is like I have to, there's an increment in price. So in terms of economic hardships, even if you call the president of Ghana today, he will tell you that, yes, I agree there's economic hardship. Prices of things are galloping and inflation is on the high side. The exchange rate, for example, was one of the main things that the MPP used to campaign against the former president. And at the time, it was 3 cedi 90, or let's just say, to be on the safer side, some people sold it, I think, 4 cedi, 4.50 pesos against $1. Now, today, Michael, as we talk now, haven't dropped in Ghana. The last time I changed dollar, it was 17 Ghana cedis against $1. So it has like quadrupled. But at the time it was 4.50 pesos against $1, the incumbent government in opposition then actually saw that it was outrageous. And that they were going to ensure that we have a situation whereby we have $1 equal to one cedi. And now we have about 17, $1 equal to 70 cedi. And the evidence are there on social media. Are playing. So food soldiers or social media battalions of the opposition NDC, they have evidence to hang on. The incumbent government doesn't have anything to hang on. So the problem I see, even monitoring Ghanaian politics, when you look at the incumbent government, it's difficult for them to even convince the mass, the citizens, that when they give them the nod again, things will change. And that's the problem. Aside economic hardship, there's also an outcry of some sort of corruption. There is pervasive corruption in the country. And most of the corrupt acts are actually allegations of corrupt acts are around so-called people at the presidency, the family members of people at the presidency. So there's this kind of things, we will call it like corruption, which is more linked to nepotism. So nepotistic corruption is what actually Ghanaians are experiencing. And it's not even corruption at a lower level. It's corruption at a very high level. And it's not only even, you feel it in Ghana, at the same times, almost all major corruption perception index are putting this government at a very high level in terms of when you compare to what happened under the former president Watch. So I'm just mentioning these things to tell you the reasons behind why the former president is ahead of the incumbent candidate. Okay, because of corruption, pervasive corruption, every citizen is feeling it, and in terms of economic hardships, it's galloping, inflation, it's galloping, and then you look at exchange, it's everybody now, it's like Ghana economy is now dollarized. We don't spend dollars, but in the minds of people, it's dollarization. So people calculate in terms of dollar before they sell or they buy. And this is the difficulty. This is the quagmire in which the incumbent party found itself. And this is what has given the opposition party leverage, a huge leverage over the incumbent party.
I was gonna ask that question, but you've covered it. I was gonna ask to talk about the situation in Ghana, to talk about the current state of affairs. But I think you've covered it very brilliantly on the economy side, the political side, the corruption and all of that. So I'll just go to the elephant in the room. So speaking of the election and the leeway that the opposition party has had, you mentioned the People's National Convention candidate has disqualified. I'll come to that in a minute. But let's talk about the NDC and their concern because Ghana is one of the stable democracies in Africa, I would say. And its electoral commission is kind of like highly respected compared to other. But we've seen in these quorum election, allegations of irregularities, especially relating to the electoral register. What do you make of this? How credible is this, and how potent is it in terms of the election?
So let me look at it from these two perspectives. So the first one, it's about opposition anxiety. And also, it's also about the opposition a perception of what is happening, about how the Electoral Commission is being manipulated. And this is, so the first aspect, it's all about opposition anxiety, even though sometimes they have their facts. I still feel that it's also one of the features of opposition behavior in African countries. Notwithstanding that, there is also a serious concern or a serious reason why the Ghanaian opposition NDC is behaving that way. Because, they have had evidence that to suggest that the Electoral Commission is out for something against them. So now this is the first part. The second part is, the second problem is the Electoral Commission itself in Ghana. So the Electoral Commission of Ghana doesn't understand, it doesn't understand the kind of the position of Electoral Commission in African elections. This is my own as an expert opinion. The Electoral Commission in Ghana, what actually has landed them into troubles is, I say it's about the exaggeration of their de jure or formal autonomy, the power of de jure autonomy. The Electoral Commission in Ghana seems to be exaggerating it. They take it for granted that just being a de jure or having formal autonomy should actually let people believe that they are independent. But this is not how it is. In electoral commissions, in fact, if you look at it across African countries, de jure or formal autonomies in African countries or developing countries has not proven to guarantee electoral commissions independence. What actually matters is what we call de facto autonomy. It's the informal autonomy. It's what actually works in African community. And indeed, the Ghana Electoral Commission has not been successful since the 1990s, Michael. I'm telling you on authority, it has not been successful since the 1990 because of the de facto, the de jure autonomy or the formal autonomy. It has been successful because of that, so the de facto autonomy which operates. They have this strong informal institution called IPAC in Ghana. Okay. It's called Inter-Party Advisory Committee. That's the full meaning, IPAC. So the IPAC has played a major role. It's one of the reasons why Ghana Electoral Commission has been successful. I will come back to that. But why I say about the exaggeration of de facto, the de jure autonomy is that because the Electoral Commission always exaggerates their de jure or formal autonomy, anytime a concern is raised, they take that posture. And they talk so much, they dwell so much on legalities, which are tied around their formal autonomy. They tie so much on legality. Unfortunately, that doesn't operate in African context. So the NDC, the National Opposition Party, currently the main issue why they went into the demonstration on the 17th of last month, September. The main reason is that they actually had believed, had audited the voters' register and believed that the Electoral Commission did an illegal transfer of about 243,540 voters to different constituencies. Okay? This is why they went for demonstration. But before that, let me give you a short history why there is a bigger problem. You see, and this is why I mentioned about the de jure autonomy. If the Electoral Commission of Ghana had understood itself, in fact, they won't be talking this time about legal autonomy. Because let's look at the history of the current Electoral Commission. Okay, the current Electoral Commissioner, the chair, how she was appointed. In fact, she was replaced. She was a replacement as a result of the current incumbent president firing the former Electoral Commissioner, Mrs. Charlotte Osei. Mrs. Charlotte Osei actually was appointed by the former president, John Dramani Mahama, who is now contesting. She appointed her. And in fact, in that appointment, it was a natural appointment because Afarijam, who was successful, who had led the Electoral Commission of Ghana to be successful from 1990 up to, I think, somewhere 2013. Okay, he went on retirement. And then John Dramani, it happened under the John Dramani tenure. So he had to replace because our constitution allows only the president to appoint. So John Dramani Mahama appointed Charlotte Osei. And Mrs. Charlotte Osei was the one who conducted the elections between John Dramani Mahama and the current president in 2016. And then the current president won. And after the president won, in 2018, the president had fired her. Okay? And replaced her with the current EC. So as soon as the president fired Charlotte Hosse, and Charlotte Hosse was fired with an allegations of procurement breaches. Okay? So, and then as soon as Charlotte Hosse was fired, the current president and replaced by Jean Mensah, that is the crux of the credibility and trust issues of the current Electoral Commission. That is the crux. That is the main thing that a lot of people don't know. So when she was fired, Charlotte Hosse was fired, and this one was appointed. Okay, this one was appointed immediately. A cross sections of Ghanaians, including the main opposition party, raised alarm that it was the president Nana Akufo-Addo had fired Charlotte Hosse and brought his own person to prepare for the next 2020 elections to manipulate it for him. Okay, now these were the initial allegations that we should call them, but if you observe it from an expert point of view, when you look at it, the subsequent actions of the Electoral Commission itself actually seems to be a testimony to this. Why do I say so? So after the appointment, the next step, the immediate step the Electoral Commission took, the immediate decision was they said they wanted to cancel the old voters register and compile a new voters register. A consensus were raised that they shouldn't do that because the NDC, from the opposition as usual, raised alarm that it was because they wanted to manipulate the elections, the 2020, and that's why they wanted to compile a new register.
New register.
It wasn't all. Civil society organization, for example, Imani raised a lot of issues about the compilation of the new voters register. And what were their concerns? Their concern was the manipulation of elections. Their concern was economic efficiency of the compilation of the new register. They had argued that it was not efficient, economically efficient, with the new register that they wanted to compile. They were arguing that they wanted to do biometric and blah. And Imani had convinced them with evidence from other parts of the world to show that it doesn't work. But they didn't listen to any concerns. They went ahead and bullied everybody and applied it and compiled it. Okay? What happened? The next step. In the election itself, in the 2020 election, after the election, the Electoral Commission, the chair of the Electoral Commission, was not able to announce a conclusive result for that 2020 election. As it stands now, Michael, they have about three streams of results that announce only one president. The first one was announced, then later they came and corrected and brought another announcement, and then they came to the third one. So as it stands now, the 2020 elections results that declared President Akufo-Addo the winner of Ghana's election actually was declared three times. Let's put that aside, and I will soon conclude on this. I'm just telling you what built up to the
history. Yeah, the history.
And then the demonstration. So let's put that aside. After the elections, President Mahama, the opposition party, actually conceded. They had raised alarm that they were cheated, they were rigged, and all that. But, they let everything went down, and they had conceded. Now, after the elections, the institution that I told you that it has been the reason behind
IPAC,
the Electoral Commission, they used legalities. Because IPAC is a de facto autonomy. It is not formal. It's not a formal institution of the Electoral Commission. So the Electoral Commission has a way of using legalities to intimidate them. And it is just, and it is an inter-party advisory committee. So all parties have members. So even smaller parties, mushroom political party, they all have, once you are a registered party, you have members on it. So what the Electoral Commission did, they intimidated the National Democratic Congress to the extent that they withdrew from IPAC. So at a point, they were not participating in the meetings of IPAC. And they did that because how they were able to mobilize smaller political parties to to get support with the new Patriotic Party, and they gang up and intimidated the NDC, which is the main opposition party, to the extent that they have no option than to pull out of IPAC. And in fact, this created a lot of lack of trust for the Electoral Commission. Then after this IPAC thing, a lot of after cries here and there and a lot of agitations, the NDC went back. They were able to reconcile them and they went back. But this is the what crowns it all. Before this year's election, I think about 6 months ago, as at May, just before, the Electoral Commission had embarked on what we call limited voters registration exercise. So the limited voters registration exercise is meant to capture people who were not part of the register. Maybe people who had now 10, 18 years, and people who were outside like myself and had come back to the country and you want to vote. So you would do what? You will register. You have the opportunity to register. But the problem is that limited registration exercise alone was fraught with a lot of controversies. The first controversy was, during the registration process, they had internet connectivity problems and it blew the whole system up. That is not even a problem because we can blame it on technology. But one of the major problems was that after the Electoral Commission compiled the register and they had brought out their results, they displayed the results on maps and infographics. Remember, what they did was that they misrepresented. So we have, like, you have Nigeria, you have Ekiti State, and then...
They will put you in a different state.
So, for example, you go and pick Anambra State results in registration and population, and replace it with Edo Ekiti. And replace it with Ekiti, and then you send Ekiti's registration and
give it to
you. Tell me, how can you know these are not mistakes? Electoral commission.
I want to, you know, you've said quite a lot here, and I want to be very, very specific.
Yeah,
now you mentioned how I'm happy that you mentioned the case of Nigeria because that's a very classic, that's a classic case with what happened last year. Because in my recent book that I published on militarized democracy in Nigeria.
Okay.
I was actually looking at the new electoral act in Nigeria and how you know, with the talk of the biometrics, transfer of, I was thinking, oh yeah, there's hope, but it was still manipulated at the end of the day.
Exactly.
And, you know, with the INEC, which is, you mentioned the NDC.
The IPAC.
You mentioned the Electoral Commission in Ghana and talk about. Yes. Independence, how they're not independent. You talked about the informal and the fact with the job. Now, let me start to ask this. In Africa, including Ghana, we have adopted the liberal. We talk about the third wave democracy from the 90s. And Ghana has been, you know, having like, I think, five successive whatever since 92.
Democracy. I mean, we are going into our ninth election.
The ninth election, good.
Yeah.
But we still see a problem. You mentioned the de jure and the de facto kind of stuff. And then there's something you mentioned about nepotism and all of that. So this ties well into what I'm looking at, which I might invite you to come and contribute to. I'm looking at liberal adoption of liberal democracy.
Okay.
In its wholesale, in terms of election. And the distinction you're making between the de facto and the, do you think this reflects that adoption of a wholesale liberal democracy and is, you know, too much focus on election, and if there should be a shift towards finding a system that actually works and that is credible and acceptable?
Exactly, this is the point. So you see, it's good, it's nice that you've mentioned this. So look at this situation, Michael. Africa, I think we have a big problem. We believe in Western prototypes to the extent that even when something is working for us, we still want to use to adopt. We actually rubbish it. But we see what we should know is that our experience and history should guide us. And Africa should know that the liberal, what we call this liberal democracy, which is the Western type prototype of governance being brought us, they've experienced it and it works for them. Does it work for us? So I say this because, you see, I mentioned the IPAC in the case of the Ghana Electoral Commission. In fact, IPAC has been one of the main reasons why our elections have been successful. We used to call the room that they declare elections in Ghana strong room. In the early 90s to the 2000s, it was called strong room because that is where they receive coalitions of results. And in this room, you have IPAC members there. So as soon as they declare MPP, it comes. Michael, I'm representing NDC. You are with MPP. He's with PSC. When the results come, we see it. And then the Electoral Commission says, okay, this is an NDC won here, MPP won in the. At the end of the day, we declare it in the strong room. My NDC people will not rebel because they know they have somebody in the strong room. And this is the work of IPAC. It is like we call it internal mechanisms, consolidation processes. And it has worked. But why I'm bringing it back again is because up to now, Ghanaians have not been able to incorporate it into the electoral, the institutions of the Electoral Commission. So what do we want? And people are raising a lot of questions whether they will hijack Electoral Commission and all that. But if it is elsewhere, by now it would have been institutionalized and become a formal channel in the Electoral Commission. But still, it is not institutionalized, Michael. This is what I'm saying. When you refer that, link that to the democracy, the liberal democracy that we are talking about, we have to begin to even look at certain informalities that plays a role, that play very important roles in our democracy, in our governance. And then we look at their negatives and positives and see how we can incorporate their positives into our governance. And if it means that the African communities or African countries should come out with a different channel of democratic system, we should go by that. Because it means we have practiced liberal or the Western type of democracy for close to, over 30 years now. Some countries 30 decades, some countries over 30 decades in Africa since 1990s. And all the countries is the same. So we need to rethink about this so-called liberal democracy. For example, what is happening in the continent now and why even liberal democracy is at a serious threat in the continent is because many people are questioning the benefits of liberal democracy. And citizens believe now that democracy has no benefits. In fact, many citizens now believe more in military regimes and military rule. So you see even in Ghana, people referring to Kagame, how Kagame is doing well, and they would wish to have that type of system here. Okay? Rwanda is a serious electoral autocratic country. They go into elections, but we call it electoral autocratic country. People now referring to even Burkina Faso and Niger. Without being there, in fact, Ghanaians are telling you how well Burkina Faso is doing. Government take place. Why I'm saying this is because even for us as democracy in Africa, the meaning of democracy means that economic well-being. But is it the definition of the liberal democracy in Western time? I'm a political scientist, and I have never seen anywhere a definition of democracy that says democracy will bring economic benefits. You get the point. In fact, when in the third waves, one of the reasons why scholars said Africa was not ready for democracy because they were trying to see whether democracies could survive in poor countries. So it means if you are poor and you adopt democracy, there is the possibility that you might not survive. So we have to evaluate it. And when it was introduced, we have not been able to even educate the masses that democracy gives us libertarian rights, the right to freedom, right access to everything, to live free and all that. Alongside, it could bring economic benefits. And alongside, it could bring economic difficulties, depending on the leaders who lead you. Africans do not know this. We do not know that democracy in itself is not, economic prosperity is not embedded in it. Economic, there is a correlation in a way, but even that correlation is questionable. Democracy and development. And we have to look at the old arguments of democracy and development. I mean, if you look at all the Ake in Nigeria, the scholar who passed away, we should revisit the writings of scholars like that to inform our way to democracy in Africa.
I would call you later because I'm working on that. That's the current research that I'm working on, so we might be able to do something like that. But let me conclude because of time. Let me ask this question. You mentioned the relevance of the leader. You mentioned something right now. So let's conclude by looking at how this election will pan out. So look at, like, make a projection, like, under, like, a different scenario. Create a different scenario for me. If the former president wins. So what is the prospect or future of Ghana in terms of the current situation? If the vice president, what is going to be this? Because we've seen in Ghana as well, there's a whole lot going on around the alliance of Sahel states and see the threat of jihadists coming into Ghana and other kind of situations going on. So how do you see this situation being resolved? Because it's still ongoing, this voter registration, and how do you see the outcome of the election and what it holds to improving the condition? Let's conclude with that.
Thank you very much. So now on the voter registration, I think there is an improvement. After the demonstration of the NDC, actually the Electoral Commission, there were a lot of calls in Ghana on the Electoral Commission to listen to the call, the concerns of the NDC. And because the NDC, they were asking for forensic audit. But I think the Electoral Commission initially had taken a very entrenched stand that they won't do that. But after so many pressure on a lot of pressure on the Electoral Commission, in fact, they gave opportunity. And this is why I talk about the IPAC. In fact, they used the IPAC to invite all the political parties to come and present their grievances. So the NDC presented what the rot that they found on the registrar, and the Electoral Commission also presented their registrar and how they have cleaned. In fact, it interests you to know that the Electoral Commission did not deny the allegations of the NDC, but they had said forensic audit is not the way they will go. They want to, they have mechanism to clean it. So they now in the IPAC meeting showed how they have cleaned it. And they promised the NDC that they will submit the newer version, the clean version, the final clean version of the Electoral Commission, of the register, back to the NDC to inspect it and to be satisfied before we go into the elections. I mean, if this happens, I think everything would calm down. So this is on that. And I think it's a positive and note, and it has improved. Now, coming to look at the what's in case the NDC, the John Dramani Mahama wins, what will be the outlook? To be honest, what I say as my own expert point of view, when I look at the Ghana case, I always tell Ghanaians that this is the turning point for Ghana's democracy. We have talked about the benefit or the dividends of democracy, like I told you. Democracy in itself, when we define it as a podcast, we don't say it leads to it. One of the variables is not economic growth. Okay. But there's correlation. It can lead to economic growth. Now, I tell Ghanaians that this is the time. I advise Ghanaians that don't even talk about coup. You have a democratic revolution now. Why I'm saying so is because I see this has happened all around in Africa. And the Ghana case will help a lot set a pace. Not because I hate the MPP, but I feel it will give us, it is a turning point for us to now conclude whether a democratically elected government in Africa will help us or not. If Ghanaians vote for the NDC and John Mahama wins, as you have asked, John Mahama currently is tied. It's like he is in a very difficult situation. In fact, until now, even when he started campaigning, he was not able to utter serious campaign promises because of the consequences the current administration is facing. So I see that in him as an aspect. When I observe the way he's looking and all that, and his remorsefulness, I see that when he gets the opportunity, almost every single word that they have uttered in that their manifesto, the NDC is going to implement it. If they don't implement it, they will not even get the next 4 years. And this is why I say we are now in the turning point. So we would see that what is left to we, the African citizens, is now to vet parties based on their manifestos. If a party brings a very good manifesto, you know that when you vote that party into power, the party will implement it. Bear in mind that what has not helped us since 1990 is that parties come with fabulous manifestos, but they don't implement them. But I see that changing in Ghana going forward after these elections, because all that the new patriotic party did not implement is now hunting them. In fact, Free SHS now in Ghana, do you think that the new patriotic party, the incumbent administration, implemented it because they have money? They have to do it because there's evidence to play against them. So if John Mahama wins, and this is why, but if Ghanaians actually decide to vote for MPP, it means they have endorsed the hardships that they are, I mean, what is going on. They apparently have endorsed that the NDC, MPP is doing well in terms of their corruption management. They are endorsing that the MPP is doing well in terms of economic hardships. This is how I would take it. And if Ghanaians vote for MPP, they continue to cry, there's no reason to blame democracy for our failure. There is now a reason to blame we, the citizens. So this is how I see it. And in terms of even fragility of the country, the security will do well. They will do well because you see that Ghana has not had attack in terms of surroundings. I mean, there are red flags.
Threats.
But we haven't done it because this government is doing well in that regard. So if John Mahama comes and then we have even one attack, it's going to be an indictment on him. So this is how I see it. I see Ghana as a turning point when you compare to other countries, that if this time they decide to go with John Mahama, he would be forced to implement every single promise that he promised on his manifesto. The only thing that Ghanaians should know is that his manifesto is a manifesto that would help change their situation. Because if he doesn't have a good manifesto and you vote him into power and he comes and implement that manifesto, which might not reflect in your realities, you will still have the hardships as you have it. So this is now the cards Ghanaians have to play when you weigh and then end this.
That's quite rich. Gaddafi, I'm so grateful for your very rich and deep insight into this situation. We are grateful to have you join us today. And we'll stop here because I know we can go all day analyzing this situation. But we'll stop it here, and hopefully this we will publish it. And
that's fine.
We'll see how that can help inform the public and of the situation. Thank you very much once again for I'll keep you posted. I'll call you shortly privately on WhatsApp to discuss an opportunity. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. And Michael, keep the good work. I look forward to our future conversations and collaborations. I was happy to share my opinion and then the little that I know about Ghana. So
great. I really enjoyed it. Thank you. Speak soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in today to yet another episode, an exciting and inspiring episode on the forthcoming Ghana election and the controversy surrounding the electoral register. As usual, join me to thank our guest, very learned guest, Dr. Gaddafi Shaibu. And apparently, stay tuned for more episodes next week. For now, take care, and I'll see you soon.